Seduction by Busaiko. Rated PG-13 for talk about sex. This is the first of three stories written as the backstory for the Maddest House AU. You don't have to know Maddest House in order to understand these stories, but I highly recommend it anyways, because it's a great story. Just a quick note about the music for this series. When I began this project, I was struck by how important music was to Busaiko's Remus, and I wanted the music for the podfic to reflect that. While I was searching for ideas, I ran across an article about openly gay singers of the 1970s. I was fascinated because I had heard of openly lesbian musicians in the women's music movement, but nothing equivalent for men. Through the winding paths of Google, I ended up at queermusicheritage.com, which had all kinds of information and references. As it turns out, I don't think Remus would have heard of almost any of these, except for Glad to Be Gay by the Tom Robinson Band. They were mostly ignored in the media and by recording companies, and actually pretty much all of them are American, with a couple of exceptions. Still, they feel appropriate to go with the stories. If you're interested in learning more, I'll list the songs and artists at the end of the podfix.
Summary. Remus Lupin gives his boy the sex talk. Well, a sex talk. He talks about sex. But it turns out to be about something else.
I try to get you talking, but you shy away. You don't want to play with me. And all my words in waiting are to no avail. But still, I fail to solve your mystery.
This is a story about sex, but there's no sex in it. Consider yourself warned, kiddo. When I was a little older than you are now, I was surprised to find that people who are having lots of sex tend to keep their mouths shut about it, and people who haven't a bloody clue yammer on and on and on. In my fifth year, I fell into the first category. It wasn't simply not wanting to be labeled a slag and have to face the ragging by my dorm mates. It just wasn't really any of their business, right? I had no illusions about my chances of employment in the wizarding world after graduation. Nil. Or the chances that the differences artificially erased by the school would drive my friends and me apart. Great. I loved my friends. I would and did exert myself to do foolish and wild things with them. But there was that overhanging sense of doom. The kind you feel when the older brother of a playmate calls you a freak, and you know, no matter how smashingly you get on now, great invisible tides will pull you and your mate apart. Exactly like that. Trust me, I've dealt with it all my life. So in my other life, the one where I lied about my age for summer jobs, and where my parents made me study for O-levels, in that life where I'd likely spend the rest of my life, I had finally found one thing that wasn't grim and depressing. Can you really be that surprised that I racked up more sexual experience in the summer of my 15th year than all of my dorm mates combined? It was a summer of sneaking out to clubs and sex in bathrooms, alleys, under tables, behind doors, and once, I'm not kidding, in the extremely posh house of a famous television presenter. The bloke I'd hooked up with being the man who looked after her houseplants and dogs and things. Which was another reason why I wasn't running my mouth about sex. I hadn't checked on my best mate's manual, but I really suspected that sleeping with men was not approved. Call it a hunch. So when my mate James clapped on his bed with yet another tragic sigh about Lily Evans, I was glad to commiserate while keeping my own experience zippered, so to speak. When Peter began decorating his corner of the room with girls' undergarments, I joined in the game of guess who, but I wasn't likely to start collecting Y-fronts. But it was Sirius Black who really got under my skin, because I was sure that he'd never done any of what his reputation said he had. He was never crude or explicit, but through a few tacit, well-placed words and gestures, he had everyone in awe of his sexual antics, most of which, we were led to assume, took place during exciting summers in his parents' London townhouse. He pronounced the scene at Hogwarts dull beyond belief. What was most intriguing was that he didn't seem to care whether it was the girls or the boys who were reputed to have fallen under his spell. Sirius's handicap, as I saw it, was that he was drop-dead gorgeous. He had thick black hair that he wore so it fell long in the front, framing his face. His face was pale and aristocratic, a bit pointy-chinned and foxy, but redeemed by his eyes, which were large and luminous and the color of rain. Unlike the rest of us, Sirius never had an awkward, gangly period, when his hands or knees got all disproportionate to his limbs, or when his shoulders widened and left him with a xylophone chest, or when his Adam's apple stuck out further than his chin. He had looked like a sex object from the time he walked on the Hogwarts train at age 11, long before any of us ought to have known what that was. Older students and staff watched Sirius just a second or two longer than they looked at other students. He had a reputation for being vain, when in fact even I spent longer each day in front of a mirror, my hair being the bane of my existence. He used his good looks, of course, milked them for all they were worth, but he also knew that he was the spitting image of his father in his school days, and if there was anyone Sirius hated, it was his father. So there we were, putting James and Peter aside for argument's sake. Quiet, buttoned up, and a bit of a joke, really, Remus Lupin, secretly queer as an Irish galleon, and bad boy Sirius Black, suspected secret virgin, living together in a room no longer than 10 paces to a side and smelling strongly of boy and boy sweat and boy hormones and other things I find hard to ignore. Can you blame me if I set myself a challenge, then, of seducing said Sirius Black? I thought it would be a bit of a lark, a little bit of fun, and I found I missed having a bit of fun, summer being a long way off. In my own defense, considering what happened later, please recall that I had never been in a relationship, had never seriously considered such a thing even possible, not when I was what I was. Have you ever tried explaining lycanthropy to a muggle? And to give myself an altruistic motive, I figured it would be good for Sirius. Gain a little experience, release of tension and all that. I didn't know or particularly care if he preferred boys or girls or both. Despite what people fuss about, it's not that important. The fundamentals are the same. Learning how to touch and be touched. Learning how to please and to be pleased. If he turned me down or if we found we didn't have any common ground, well, potentially humiliating. But I was prepared for that. I was, you recall, assuming that after graduation, I'd not be likely to see any of my roommates again, except possibly in strained meetings and bars, where we would try not to notice that we'd drifted apart. Having set my sights on Sirius, admit that when I pick a challenge, I do it well, I had no idea of how to begin. I'd usually been the one picked up in the clubs, but that experience didn't translate well in this situation. I wasn't about to grab Sirius's arse and whisper, "Hey, wanna fuck?" So I started by watching him. So much gets overlooked when you live and work side by side with someone. But as I observed Sirius, I noticed several things that I must have been blind to have missed. Sirius worked. Most people assumed he was like James, one read through the book and it was all in his head. But Sirius spent twice as much time studying as James did. Not the least because Peter and James could knock him out of orbit so easily. Sirius would leap up and run off with them, returning with suspicious pudding in his hair or showing off someone's initials carved into James' leg hair. But long after James had dropped off snoring, a light shone behind Sirius's curtain. If called on anything, he'd give you that narrow-eyed look of scorn, the one that said, "Any fool can do that. Everyone knows that." But he practiced his hexes and charms and jinxes until sweat plastered his hair to his head and his arms shook. He regularly stayed up all night to finish essays and assignments. He would not be left behind by James. More than brothers, I think he wanted to be twins with James. To be James. Which was bollocks, as I saw it. James had his strengths, mostly a good brain and an extremely thick skull to keep it in, but also that certain kind of leadership quality that lends itself to town square statuary. Forward, boys, into the fray! Sirius had different strengths. He excelled at languages and art, and never seemed to know what he was thinking. Strange and wonderful ideas would fall from his mouth, and his eyes would widen just a bit in surprise. He also had an intuitive grasp on the rules of school and social dynamics. That he flouted those rules, that he spent his days in detention or fighting pointless battles. Well, I found myself wondering, what is he trying to prove? And to whom? I also noticed that Sirius had a thing about touching. He did not touch, nor did he like being touched. He would make an effort with James, Peter, and myself. We had been wrestling and fighting and staggering around under each other's heavy arms for 4 years now. We knew what we looked like naked. We had no privacy beyond bed curtains and wonky silencing spells. But Sirius projected a kind of aggressive untouchability. As we left the dormitory for the common room, he distanced himself from us just a little, through the portrait just a little further, and so on, when we were outside running around like idiots. Our natural state. Sirius was the first to spin away, as if breaking free of tethers, fleeing from a cage. Lots of people are like that, of course, for a myriad of reasons, but Sirius was the only person I knew who could also turn into a dog. And Padfoot loved being touched. He begged for it, slobbered all over our faces and shoes, climbed on our chests, and shed immense quantities of black fur all over us. If I watched, after I started really looking at Sirius, I could see a Padfoot mood steal over him. When he could transform at those times, Padfoot was wild for affection. If, as it so often happened, he could not transform, well, those were the times when Sirius's innate wildness spread out of control. But back to the seduction. That's what you're here for, right? I wasn't sure how to go about seducing someone. No more than you would, I imagine. I wanted Sirius to become aware of me in little insignificant ways that would change the way he saw me. I started rearranging my schedule so we bumped into each other at odd times, coming in or out of the showers, for example, or as we rushed to classes at the opposite ends of the castle. It's a ploy that can become ridiculously obvious, witness James Potter, Exhibit A, so I also began avoiding Sirius. I came too late to meals to sit near him, grabbing a seat at the far end of the great hall where I'd sit backwards on the bench and talk to the Ravenclaws. Things we'd always done together, the Sunday morning toast roast in the common room, or not returning to the dormitory after an astronomy practicum and spending the night up on the tower, I'd do or not do, no explanations given. After a couple of weeks, Sirius began looking at me warily. There was no one thing he could accuse me of, and he knew it, but the balance had been upset. If you've never tried to be mysterious, I recommend it. It's immensely entertaining. The next part of the plan came together due to pure serendipity, and I owed it entirely to my mother and Peter Pettigrew. My family is close, and a tradition of ours was that on New Year's Eve, we rolled up the rugs and had every relative in Britain over for a party. This year, my mother suggested that I invite my friends from school. The prospect of four boys to move furniture and clean must have been a motive, but she forgot to calculate the immense cost of feeding us. On the minus side, I had no idea what my medical cousins would make of my poor roommates. On the plus side, it was a dance party, and I doubted Sirius had ever attended the like. Invitations were duly made. My mother sent off polite notes to the Potters, Pettigrews, and Blacks. I believe Sirius gave my mother the address of his more tolerant cousin, Andromeda. Not that he needed his parents' permission to go anywhere for the holidays. He stayed with the Potters, generally. Peter and James worried about their clothes and petitioned to have their girlfriends invited. My mother sent off more letters to the Evans and the Hughes. And then Peter cornered me in the hall after Transfiguration one day and confessed that he didn't exactly know how to dance. I am not sure if the correlation means anything, but in my experience, the more pure-blooded the wizard, the less aptitude he or she has for anything musical. It most likely is a result of nurture. Anyone forced to listen to musicians like Celestina Warbeck on the wireless is bound to become warped, but I don't rule out a genetic component. I'm half-blood, and my mother is from Brazil. I've an excellent sense of rhythm. I arranged to meet Peter after lessons in our room to gauge the extent of the disaster. I had the record player that I had smuggled into the dormitory first year, and a record collection that took up half my trunk. I decided to start with the basics, and within 15 minutes, Peter had nearly killed me. He somehow elbowed me hard enough behind the ear that I saw spots, dropped me on my arse twice, and slammed his head into the door while attempting something that could only politely be called a curtsy. After that, I called time out, and we both fell over laughing so hard we could barely breathe. Then James and Sirius walked in. The next 15 minutes were, if possible, even more maddening and hysterical, but the end result that all of our beds and belongings were shoved over against the wall, clearing a space large enough for us to practice dancing without losing any major limbs. James and Peter burned with grim determination not to make fools out of themselves now that their girlfriends were coming. Sirius mostly lounged on his bed amongst the great piles of stuff that had been hastily swept up and unwatched in great amusement. I didn't say anything to Sirius, but the essential injustice of his non-participation obviously stung James, who lacked the ability to move both his arms and his legs at rhythm. Off a broomstick and in trousers, James was a sad sight, and Sirius was delighting in it just a little too much. By our fourth day of lessons, James ceased making snappish comments and simply dragged Sirius out onto the makeshift dance floor by the hair. Sirius protested that he'd never catch up, and then in that he had a bald spot now. I told James to practice with Peter, and took Sirius into my arms for the first time. Ha! Doesn't that sound melodramatic? I just added that bit to see if you were paying attention. To continue. It was mostly a matter of smiling through toe mutilation and saying encouraging things, even after having my head cracked into a bedpost like a coconut, or being shoved under James as Peter whirled him past in an oblivious daze. Oddly enough, progress was made. Peter at least showed real promise, and James mastered the steps, even though he moved as if he kept a broomstick concealed on his person. A bit before we left for winter break, James and Peter asked if they could have Lily and Ji-min over for a bit of private dancing. It was adolescent overconfidence at its finest, completely hormone-driven, and I have no idea still why the girls agreed to go along with it. Sirius and I found ourselves in a dimly lit room with romantic music on the stereo and two totally absorbed couples. We watched them for a while, and then Sirius leaned over and whispered in my ear, "Let's get out of here." I doubt our departure was noted. We had discovered the way onto the top of Gryffindor Tower, third year, and while it lacks the amenities of the Astronomy Tower, namely a staircase, it was a good place to escape to, without risking getting filched. I perched myself up on the wall, making myself oblivious to the breezy dark drop-off behind me, and lit a fag. Sirius crouched down in the shadow of the wall, the moon was waning but still bright, and flicked small stones at me. "Didn't know you smoked, Mooney." I swallowed the smoke and I swallowed his words. He spoke as if it didn't matter, which might mean that it did. I held the cigarette out to him. "Have a drag?" He shook his head. "I never have. I'd make a bigger fool out of myself than I do dancing. How long do you suppose they'll be at it?" "With Lily Evans there? Not long. Half an hour. 40 minutes tops." "Bloody freezing up here." I unlit the cigarette and stuck it back in the pack. If I was good, I could make one fag last 4 or 5 days. "We could head back." "No, stay here and talk with me a while. We don't talk anymore. Well, you say things like, 'Lead with the left foot,' and 'Ow, damn it,' and I say things like, 'Oh, sorry,' but that's not really conversation." I crossed to sit by him. It was true, part of my plan with a capital P, but he sounded all forlorn. "What are we conversing about, then?" He shrugged. releasing warmth into the air. I didn't know you smoked. I didn't know you knew how to dance. I had no bloody idea that you had 8 million muggle cousins, half of whom are eligible females. It's a bit... Well, I thought that we... You know that we knew each other pretty well. What other surprises are you going to spring on me? Do you have a girlfriend somewhere? Do you write dreadful poetry? Did you have wild, mad sex with her all last summer in a cabana on a tropical isle? Man of intrigue, you are. I remember thinking that Sirius would enjoy smoking a lot if he got around to trying it. No girlfriend pads, no poetry, not much intrigue. He was still facing ahead, but I could feel his eyes on me. Ah, but you don't deny the wild, mad sex? Why would I? He was silent a minute. Is it good, then, sex? It can be. It depends on the person and what you're doing. Now his head did turn, tilting slightly, and his dark eyes met mine. And how many people have you had sex with, Mooney? And what have you done? I reached for my cigarettes again because it was turning into that kind of conversation. It was a bit rich, Sirius Black, of all people, sounding so scandalized. It rather made me feel like a tart. Why would you want to know? I mean, do you want me to really tell you, or should I lie? I dug out my half-burned fag, and Sirius gently removed it from my hand and stuck it in his pocket. I haven't, he said softly. Had sex, I mean. I think I figured that out. It's not for lack of opportunity. I want to find someone who wants me. I'm not going to be somebody's trophy. Which was when I started to feel guilty. I certainly wasn't attracted to Sirius's money or his god-awful family or even to his attractiveness. It seemed more likely to lead to trouble, although his eyes were nice. But I did like his sly cleverness and his easy humor. I liked the comfortable ease we had with one another. I got on best with him of all, and now I wondered why. I was 15. I know I keep saying that. It's an excuse and an explanation, and it means I was an idiot in most cases. While I knew quite a bit about sex, I had absolutely no idea that men could fall in love with each other. There was sex, all right, and then there was love, which was boy-girl territory, white weddings, and until death do you part. So don't go thinking I looked deeply into Sirius's eyes and my heart was his or any such thing. If I felt anything at all toward him, it was a kind of pity-laced wonder. The options for distraction are limited on a tower roof, in the dark, with nothing at hand but a squash packet of fags. I pushed myself up, bones already stiff from the cold, and grabbed Sirius's hand on the way, forcing him to stand as well. If you're not going to allow me my fag, we might as well practice dancing. There's no music, he said, his chin rising in the look that said, "You idiot," but which I had discovered meant, "I'm afraid." I'll count for you. I'd hum for you, but you know I can't carry a tune. Too many horrible screaming changes into the wolf, and too many nights howling had given me one of the worst cases of lycanthrope's throat that my doctors had ever seen. Talking was hard enough. Strangers often asked me to repeat myself when I was younger, but singing was right out of the question. I arranged his arms to my satisfaction. "You lead." It took a few spins around the top of the tower to convince him that I was serious, and also that he was a much better dancer than he thought he was, especially when he didn't have to be on the lookout for Peter hands or James feet. I'm a good teacher, and Sirius a good learner. We were so good, in fact, that it was easy to forget that that's what we were and simply matched our movements each to the other. With his confidence, the rhythm came, and it was suddenly everything dancing ought to be. Like flying without a broomstick, or sex without the nudity. When Sirius finally fell against me, laughing and out of breath and warm and begged for mercy, it seemed such a natural thing, it seemed right, to cup his cheek in my hand, to lean forward and steal the laughter from his mouth with my own. Sirius froze, and I felt the intake of his breath. How could I not have? I shut my eyes and finished kissing him, and then stepped back to eye him warily. I had planned on kissing him as part of my seduction, But just because it was on the schedule didn't make it any less real or make my heart beat any slower. Now I knew where the expression playing with fire came from. I had set myself on fire, and I'd only myself to blame. "You kissed me." Sirius' eyes were wide and dark, his face pale in the moonlight. He touched his mouth with one finger. He had that padfoot look about him. "I did," I shrugged. "I'd like to do it again." Sirius was holding back the gates of his protections that threatened to come crashing down. He was trusting me with his real self, and it took my breath away. "Is this about sex?" he asked. I realized something then, blindingly obvious after the fact. Allowing a stranger access to your body permits an enormous freedom of the mind and of the emotions. You need never consider the other as a person at all, but merely a tool for your own gratification. Sharing your body with one of your best mates, or wanting to, was like walking into a minefield. I was conscious of all I knew about Sirius, the way that he moved, the dazed expression he had waking up, the way that he used his handsome face as a barrier to keep the world out, how he constantly expected that barrier to be violated, of the way he stood in the moonlight, trusting me when I had the power. I saw now, to hurt him very badly indeed. "It's about Remus Lupin," I said, "and Sirius Black." He nodded at this as if it made sense. I want very much right now. I want just to hold you. To be held by you. Could we do that, please?" I don't recall who moved first. Perhaps we both closed the gap. We were the same height then, he and I, and it was so easy to wrap my arms around him. I know my head was on his shoulder. I remember the smell of his hair and the warmth of his neck, the way we fit together without a space at all between us, like two hands clasping. His hands were on my back, half curled like fists, and it was funny and sad because I could tell he didn't even know how to do this. I spread my palms flat and stroked him gently, shoulder to waist. I felt him tremble, felt his head lower until his forehead was on my shoulder. I remember that I was talking to him, but what the words were escapes me. You might say the same things to an injured animal when you want to tame it, or to get a wild bird to alight on your hand. You might say the same things to a child screaming with pain. That's how I learned the words at any rate, and now I pass them on. Sirius began talking jerkily and counterpoint, and the sheer need in him was black and bottomless. He was falling. He was drowning. He was compelled into a destiny he never chose. He was running hard now. It was close behind him now, and, "I'm afraid of the dark, Mooney," he said. The funny thing about that age is you feel so damned grown up most of the time. But your child's heart hasn't had time to hide away yet. I felt like a child. Sirius looked like a child. And I put aside the game I had been playing because all of a sudden I didn't see the point of it anymore. And I kissed Sirius again. My hands ran through his hair, thicker and coarser than it looked, traced the line of skin behind his ears down to his throat. Scraped my knuckles along the faint stubble of his jaw. I could see the moon reflected in his eyes, the fall of his most annoying hair down across those eyes. His hands were tight on my shoulders to pull me closer, to push me away, or shake me senseless. I didn't know. But he kissed me back, and not half as badly as he had danced in the beginning. It wasn't the prelude to anything, or the promise of things to come, or the seed of romance. I don't know where you get these ideas. It was just a kiss. It was just a kiss that neither of us could end, not even after we'd sunk to the cold rooftop to escape the colder wind, not even after bumping knees and elbows and teeth and noses and rubbing palms raw on the rough stones. It was only when I looked up and realized that the world had gone white all around us that I was able to stop. I pulled back, but traced Sirius's bruised mouth with a finger. "It's snowing." My voice was almost completely gone. I don't suppose he even heard me, but he was watching my mouth and smiled like the sunrise. "Remarkable grasp on the obvious, Mooney." He somehow had his hands uncomfortably stuck in my pockets, and this awkward position didn't allow him to lean back away from me, so he sat almost touching noses in the snow. "Will you be kissing me again ever?" Or is this just some kind of bizarre rooftop aberration? I had to smile. I might do it again. You look good, Kissed. He leaned just a bit closer, our foreheads bumping. You look good, Kissed, too. There was nothing to say to that, really, because it would only have led to more kissing and being found frozen to death on the tower roof, lip to lip. So he got up awkwardly and climbed down the wall in the snowstorm in the dark, with a certain amount of numb fingers flailing and failing and falling. There was a gutter to maneuver that nearly made my heart stop, and then a bit of a ledge, and then we were on the common room balcony, breathing hard. Sirius brushed his mouth against mine one more time, but it really was too cold for more. "Can I sleep with you tonight?" he asked, grabbing my arm as I worked the window open. "Anytime," I replied, and then we were indoors in the blessed warmth and sneaking up the dormitory stairs. You'd think we had been able to continue sneaking until we were both in pajamas in bed, but God was not so merciful. As soon as the door shut behind us, the lights went up, and James and Peter bombarded us with questions. We were wet, covered in scrapes and bruises, reddened with cold, gone 3 whole hours, and clearly something had been up. Neither of them believed that we had simply been up the tower smoking, not the least because we didn't smell like smoke, so getting to bed took more of an effort than it should have. I was finally under quilts, at last feeling my toes again, when the curtain around my bed pulled and a great black shape jumped up pretty much all over me. I managed to find room for Padfoot without having dog fur up my nose or my ribs crushed, and woke up with my arms full of dog. Ha! I told you from the start this wasn't a story about sex. I know what you were thinking, but it wasn't like that at all. You can go and ask Sirius for the details of our sex life if you're feeling voyeuristic. My story was about the deep currents that underflow sex, that move two people, even unlikely ones, together, and what love looks like even when you don't know that's what it is. And now my story's done. Off to bed with you then. Sweet dreams, and we'll see you in the morning. The end.
Seduction, the Mrs. Lupin remix by Buseiko. This is more of the Maddest House AU backstory. Summary: kissing, yelling, and painting. Further described by the author as an offstage kiss in two lectures, follows seduction but can be read independently. Reading them back to back makes me laugh, though.
Pictures of naked young women. Fun in tidbits of Playboy, page 3 of the Sun. There's no nudes in Gay News or One magazine, but they still found excuses to call it obscene. Read how disgusting we are in the press, the Telegraph, People and Sunday Express. Molesters of children, corrupters of youth, is there in the paper? It must be the truth. Try and sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy that way. Hey, sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy that way.
It was not how Sirius would have had it happen. His parents were often angry and he was often bruised, but never in the essential core of who he was. But this, the air thick with parental disappointment and disapproval, so heavy that he had trouble breathing. He'd sunk as low as he could go. The cellar. There was a tool bench with a shelf of paints and potions and dirty buckets at the foot of the stairs, and a heavy steel door to the right, in the shadows. He went through, knowing but not knowing what he would find. It smelled like old blood, even though he saw nothing but shabby cleanliness when he held the lamp aloft.
The walls were bare and white with damp spots. The cage was rusted iron. The smell might have been the smell of the cage. But it still smelled like blood, and he couldn't bring himself to touch it. He did what he usually did in his parents' cellar, sat in the farthest corner, arms around knees and back to the wall. He nursed the light and tried to block out the words that came down through the floorboards of the kitchen and resonated. How could you, in this house? After what you did last summer, reeking of alcohol and sex. Only 15, my God! Remus's voice was too low to hear, but Sirius could picture him. Arms crossed, chin down, one of his precious fags cupped in one hand. He heard the footfalls move from the front room. Oh, God, why did he choose the front room of all places? To the kitchen, right over his head.
His father could get yours fired in a minute.
Have you sent down from school?
No, you didn't think, did you?
And put that blessed thing out.
It was one kiss, damn it.
Remus wouldn't shout, didn't shout, but he was speaking loudly, and Sirius could hear every word now.
That's all. I'm aware of what you think. I wouldn't do anything more in your house.
His mother, always so calm and sensible.
We want you to be safe. Safe from friends? From lovers? What's the point in staying alive if I can never touch anyone? You know that's not. Use your head. You don't need to corrupt the son and heir of a leading family.
It's not corruption.
Well, what is it? Love? I didn't think so.
You can wait until you're an adult.
It's illegal. We've been over this and over it.
It's not fair. He's not crying, is he? Sirius thought. He wanted to sink into the ground. The cellar was not low enough.
He knows what you are, Remus, love, and he could use that against you if you fought, if you scared him.
He kissed me. Oh, gods, Remus was crying, hiccuping horribly through the words.
He kissed me because I'm me, not because he wanted to get laid. And do you know, that has never happened before. Did you know that?
You sell yourself too cheaply, Remus.
It's what I'm asked to do.
There was a silence and a rattling noise. Perhaps, Sirius thought, the crisis had blown over and the tea phase was beginning.
Does he know about next year?
Chairs scraped loudly overhead.
When I decide, if I decide, then I'll tell him.
But you're not going to stay.
Mom, you're not going to get any grandbabies out of me anyway.
You can't know that at 15. Things change. You might meet the right person.
You want me to trade my magic and all my friends on the off chance that someday I might fancy a girl and someday I might want children.
You know enough magic? You'll sit your fifth-year exams. That's good enough.
Most parents don't pressure their children into dropping out of school.
Go to school. There are plenty of good schools there.
I don't want to.
My great-grandparents didn't fight their way out of slavery to have you lined up to be branded and castrated like an animal.
Anna.
Mom, Jesus, can we go back to fighting about sex?
I want you to go back to being my little boy.
There was a rattling of crockery set on the table.
I don't know who you are anymore.
I wish you wanted to find out. There was a silence after that, a tea-drinking kind of silence.
Where's he gone, then? Sirius?
Upstairs, out, anywhere but here. I'll find him.
No, it's late. He'll come back if he's coming back. You go on up to bed.
Chairs moved.
I'll make up the bed in the guest room.
You don't trust me.
Do we have reason to?
Sirius couldn't hear the answer to that, but he did hear steps moving out from the kitchen. He let out a long breath he hadn't known he was holding and rocked, letting his head hit the wall behind him. There were distant door noises and water ran through the pipes. When the house had stilled itself, Sirius pushed himself up slowly. He made it to the bottom of the stairs, lantern in hand. Before he allowed himself to wonder where he was going. He supposed he could go to the Potters for the last week of Easter break. James would ask questions, would assume some sort of fight between Remus and Sirius. Peter's house was closer. He might even be able to walk there in a day. Remus had said he had gone once or twice by bicycle. He could steal Remus's bicycle. He sat on the bottom step and stared up at the everyday household clobber before him. A huff of air came from his mouth at the same time as the idea hit him. "We'll go out with a bang, won't we, then?" he said to the darkness, and stood up resolutely. Someone was coming downstairs. The concrete floor was really quite cold, and Sirius had curled up in a ball, trying to get warm, unable to sleep. He'd wanted so badly to change, to be Padfoot, but the thought of betraying that secret as well was too much. He sat up. He'd refilled the lantern. It still gave off a cheerful yellow glow. Anyone coming down the stairs would see. "Remus?" The horrible steel door opened further. "Good morning, Sirius." He jumped to his feet and nearly fell over. "Mrs. Lupin, good morning." He glanced at her nervously. "Is it?" She was looking at the walls with something like wonder. There hadn't been enough paint to finish everything he'd meant to draw, but he'd covered every surface he could. He thought the effect was rather psychedelic, like being inside one of Remus's record album covers. He'd used up all of the yellow and red paint, and most of the pink, and there was not much left of the blue or green. He had used 2 cans of black. One of them had been new, and he had thought twice about opening it, but he needed black for outlines and great shaggy dogs. Mrs. Lupin took the lantern off the hook and walked slowly around the room. "This is your school, yes? The children on broomsticks?" "The Quidditch team. James Potter's the one falling off." "And that's James as well?"
"And Peter and Remus."
"And you in the scarf. Why are you standing on the table?"
"We flooded the room with treacle, third year. It was supposed to be lizards, but I sneezed."
Remus's mother raised her eyebrows, a most dubious expression.
"Remus thought it was funny."
"I see that. He's laughing." She reached out one finger as if to touch her son's joy.
"Oh, it's still tacky. The paint, wet."
Mrs. Lupin's hand dropped and she moved to the next picture.
"You make me look so very young."
Sirius waved his hand vaguely.
I wanted him to see the people he loves in this room, not to be alone."
"He loves rats?" Sirius had drawn Wormtail hanging from a very prongy bit of prongs.
"A friend's pet."
Sirius shrugged and shoved his hands into his pockets, then recalled that this was rude and took them out, wiping them nervously on, oh bugger, Remus's trousers.
"Remus did not tell me that you were an artist."
"Ma'am, Mrs. Lupin." Sirius forced his chin up to look her in the eye. It's hard to know what to say when you're damned for telling both the truth and lies. She patted her pocket in a terribly familiar gesture and pulled out a packet of cigarettes.
"Do you smoke?"
He took one, not because he liked it, but because Remus had taught him, at least, how not to embarrass himself. He took Mrs. Lupin's gold lighter and lit her fag for her, then his own. She took a long drag, held it, and then let the smoke out gently. She pushed open the cage door and sat on the sill with such practiced ease that Sirius wondered if this was her morning ritual, sneaking cigarettes in the cellar.
"You heard us last night? You were here? Hiding from all that?"
She waved her hand in the smoke, indicating the kitchen above.
"Frightening, yes?"
Sirius shrugged. At least his hands weren't at loose ends anymore.
"First, you have to know that we love Remus very, very much. Do you understand that?"
He looked at her and then nodded at the picture of Remus's parents dancing in a swirl of colors. His mother laughing, and his father with his pale features and his habitual expression of pleased surprise.
"And we don't dislike you. I think you're a good boy. Do you understand that?"
Sirius wondered how it was that he'd been reduced to communication through spastic twitches of his shoulders and head.
"Well then, have your parents talked to you about sex yet, Sirius?" Please don't, Mrs. Lupin. She laughed, a deep, throaty laugh of real amusement. Oh, if we are talking about sex, call me Anna. You do these things, and still you blush. If it's nothing you can do and tell me to my face, then you shouldn't be doing it, Sirius. Sirius was definitely bound for deeper underground. He looked up, his face on fire. I kissed Remus. He didn't kiss me, but that's all, I swear to you. We said some things last night, which you were not meant to hear. Two things. She sighed, and her hands moved in the shapeless form of pulling understanding from the air. Last summer, Remus discovered sex has the power to make people like him. Do you understand what I'm saying? That if he spreads his legs, he can buy what feels like love for a short while. A day, perhaps, or an hour. As a mother, of course, I must feel appalled, and I think we must have done something wrong, that he cannot see that he is worth more. So I tell you this, if you think he is trying to buy your affection, or if you want to buy his, do us all a favor and stay the hell away. She took a last long drag on the cigarette, and then stubbed it out on an iron bar. Sirius opened his mouth, having no idea what to say, but she waved him quiet. The second secret you have stumbled upon is that his father and I want him out of Hogwarts and out of the wizarding world, and preferably the country before his 17th birthday. When, if you didn't know, he will report to the werewolf registry and be marked with a number, and he will leave unable to father children. There are places where this is not so. She gestured again, her hands describing frustration. Brazil, for one. He could go there, live without magic, have children. But Remus is gay, Sirius said, feeling rather stupid. The words had a magic of their own to him. He felt as if by speaking something until now unspoken, that he has called something into an existence, summoned a demon. And if Remus is gay, what am I? Do I want to know? He is 15. Good Lord, I was a total fool at 15. I wanted to be a nun, and then I wanted to be a doctor. I was going to Paris, you know, for dancing, and, oh, I was picking out husbands right and left. But not wives. She looked at him, and he squirmed. Yes, Remus, he heard himself saying brightly. While I was sneaking smokes in the basement with your mother, I asked her if she fantasized about women. His life was not worth living. I went to a girls' school. Most girls, but not me, no, had their first kisses with other girls. It was a safe practice. What Remus is doing is not safe. But it's his decision. Sirius dropped down on the floor, needing not to tower over Remus's mother. If he has sex, if he goes to the registry, or if he graduates from school, you can give him advice, but you can't make him do anything. You never really could. He rubbed out the cigarette on the floor, watching the sparks. Look at my parents. If Remus were their son, they'd just keep him in that cage. You can't cage your children, Sirius. I know that. You can. I spent most of my summer break locked in my parents' cellar, Sirius said, something he's told no one, the fount of his nightmares. Tell me why that's not illegal and being with Remus is. Mrs. Lupin got up and sat down beside him, putting one arm around his shoulders to hug him. Sirius stiffened. Poor little boy, she said, her hand moving in small reassuring circles on his shoulder. Sirius snorted. No one ever says poor Sirius Black. It's just not done. All the more reason. When I'm 17, Sirius said, I'm leaving my parents' house and I'm never going back. I'll sleep in the streets before setting foot there again. I hate them. Den of vipers. Do you love Remus? Sirius's ears went red and he ducked his head. Somehow it ended up on Mrs. Lupin's shoulder, with her hand stroking his hair. He's one of my best friends. It doesn't matter, right? If he's... Sirius waved at the cage. Because we look out for him anyway. He's a mystery and a puzzle, and I like him. A lot. She sighed. You might have just said yes. I'm a black. She looked down at him in question. He spread his hand helplessly. I don't know what love is. Besides, he added, I'm 15. You wouldn't believe me if I said I did anyway. I want him to be happy. So do I. Mrs. Lupin stood in one graceful move, and Sirius stumbled to his feet beside her. We'll go upstairs, and I'll make you a cup of hot milk. Then you go and lie down for a while. Shall I pack? Mrs. Lupin looked at him, her face expressionless. Oh, we have lived with Remus bitten and turned into a monster, and Remus drunk and debauched. I think we might be able to learn to live with Remus kissed by a good friend who likes him a lot. Learning to live with it, that's what it means to have children. And to love. And she led the way up out of the cellar into the lustral light of dawn. The end.
Now, Papa, Papa, did I spoil your dreams? I know you wanted to see me marching in the Marines. Ah, but that won't prove my manhood, as it didn't prove yours. Because I went to talk to that landlord while you stood behind the door. Well, I hear you calling me crazy, but I think it's out of fear, 'cause you're not so sure that you aren't.
Consider the Lotus by Buseiko. Summary. Third of the three Mattis House AU backstories. Read Seduction and Mrs. Lupin Remix first, or else you'll be lost. Or, of course, you can listen to them as podfic. Covers the aftermath of the prank. SB/RL/.
I'm a man. So, I'm an elegant man. I'm a man.
Part the First. A Prank Gone Wrong, Wherein There Are Insults and Curses. The Lupin's feather duster of an owl swooped into the great hall that morning with a pale peach Muggle stationery envelope. Sirius carried the owl out away from the curious eyes of his house and the judgmental eyes of his friends. The letter said simply, Explain yourself. He grabbed parchment, quill, and owl and went out the window, the dangerous way up the tower, but he didn't really give a damn. He'd already fallen. He'd been so close, so nearly free, and he'd thrown it away in a moment of spite. Sirius started his letter, Dear Mrs. Lupin, but then scratched it out and wrote, Dear Anna, and then he wrote everything, with apologies between every paragraph and between every line. The reply came that afternoon. Sirius took the limp owl up to the owlry to recover and opened the envelope with shaking fingers. There was another letter inside with Remus scrawled on it in heavy blue ink. The note for Sirius was short. Thank you. Take this to Remus as soon as you get it. Tell him you're sorry and don't let him push you away. Anna Luisa. Sirius hadn't seen Remus yet. Madame Pomfrey had turned him away four times already, but this time the letter was its ticket in. Remus looked at Sirius with no expression at all. It felt as if the chill of winter had descended. Peter and James snuck awkward glances one to the other, but when Sirius handed over the letter from Mrs. Lupin, they grabbed the moment as their chance to escape. Remus's right hand was strapped to his chest. Sirius moved around to the left side of the bed and held the envelope out. I'm so sorry, Remus, he said. I am so god-awfully sorry. I did the worst possible thing I could ever have done to you.
I used you, and I put your life in danger, and Snape's, and I wasn't thinking, it was just bloody stupidity.
Shut it, Remus said tiredly. He handed the envelope back. Open this for me.
Sirius did, silently, taking the folded letter out and setting it on top, and if Remus noticed that he was doing a good job of not crying, he didn't mention it. He watched as Remus read each page and moved it awkwardly to the back. Finally, Remus finished and folded the letter back into the envelope, awkwardly and with much rumpling.
My mother says she believes you're a basically good person, if incredibly stupid and immature. She says your explanation made a kind of twisted, hot-headed sense.
He looked Sirius straight in the eyes.
I don't want to hear your explanations, all right? When I get out of here, I'm going to beat the crap out of you.
I deserve it.
You do. You deserve far worse.
Remus was also not crying, and Sirius crouched down next to the bed and put his arms around him carefully, because Remus was all banged up. Remus was stiff against him, and then his breath went out in a hiccup of pain.
You bloody, ignorant, predatorious bastard, you stupid fuck, Remus said into Sirius's shoulder, the words muffled by the folds of Sirius's robe. You can burn in hell for all I care. I wish you pain and suffering and itches you can't scratch and mangling. You're an absolute walking disaster, a goddamn nightmare with your aprosec head up your ass. You never do anything right, a total waste, mad and bad and dangerous. I thought you liked me, you know. I thought I liked you.
I do like you.
Then how could you do this?
Sirius pressed his face into Remus's hair.
I'll tell you everything if you want.
No excuses, no explanations. I can't think of any reason good enough.
Neither can I.
Was someone hurting you? Snape performed the Cruciatus curse on you and you just snapped under torture?
Leave it alone, all right? Even if he did, you'd just be angry because then you'd have to feel sorry for me instead of despising me.
I do rather want to despise you right now.
Doesn't bother me. I've been despising myself all day.
Remus wiped his face carefully on the point of Sirius's shoulder.
I'm tired.
He lay back, his face blotchy, eyes closed. Sirius kept one hand on Remus's arm and brushed the hair back from Remus's face with the other.
Do you want me to go?
I want you to know, I need you to know, or this all means nothing. Do you understand that? If you don't know, if you don't understand, then our friendship means nothing.
Remus shut his eyes on the desolation in Sirius's face.
You come with me. I'm going to the registry before winter break. You come with me then, and we'll see if you learn anything. I'll give you the tour.
He smiled in a way that was both vicious and exhausted.
I'll show you the execution room. Who knows? We might be lucky enough to see someone put down.
Then you tell me what you think.
Now with a mark on my forehead and sperm on my tongue, enraged with the fever of a man who'd been numb. Now I close your holy book and I demand back the time that you took, and I'll sing it out loud. I'm gay and I'm proud.
Part the second. Where werewolves go, wherein it is not pleasant for our heroes. Penance. Punishment. Waiting room. The most unpleasant kind of waiting room that could be possibly imagined, and yet still worse. Wood slat benches that were slat short in the seat, so that Sirius had to brace his weight on his feet or collapse to the floor. The floor was a masterwork of rough, uneven stones with moisture collecting between them. The room was in a basement, a very deep basement, far under the Ministry of Magic. It was accessible only by a round iron staircase, and after descending the first four flights, Sirius had nearly been ill. He might still be ill. The room was airless and devoid of any reading material. The walls were lined with public health posters about horrible diseases. And lycanthropy, of course. A particularly graphic one showed a werewolf going through the transformation in endless loop of silent agony. It was sellotaped on the back of the office door directly under the brass tag that read, Werewolf Registry. There were more people waiting than Sirius had thought there would be, but after half an hour it didn't surprise him. The werewolf registrar was in and out constantly, rushing down the corridor to the werewolf capture unit or pounding up the stairs with armloads of files. When he did call a name from the sign-in tacked to the wall, it was almost an afterthought. The shame and resignation in the room was palpable, looking sidelong at Remus. Sirius bit, chewed, and swallowed every comment that came to rest on the tip of his tongue. Upstairs, at Werewolf Support Services, Remus had been able to make an appointment with a counselor and then bring shabby but comfortable chairs and a cup of tea involved. That was the difference, Sirius supposed, between being and beast. He shifted his feet, all the muscles in his legs spasming, and he put his hand over Remus's. Remus didn't look at him, but he turned his hand over, lacing his fingers with Sirius's and squeezing tightly.
"I shouldn't have made you come here," Remus said suddenly. "It's not fair. You should go."
"I want to be here anyway," Sirius said, "for you." It was true, and Remus didn't even know and would never be told how hard Sirius had worked to be sitting right there on the painfully uncomfortable bench where only werewolves, approved family members, and ministry-approved advocates were allowed. He didn't know that Sirius had petitioned to be declared an illegal adult in order to sit the advocate's exam, or that he failed the exam the first time and had to sit it again in Dover. It didn't really matter. McGonagall thought he was acting rashly and seemed to relish handing him every new pile of documents that he had to complete. His mother, when word got back to her as it inevitably would throw fits. But Remus had asked him to come, so he came. "Do you think I'm making a mistake, Pats?" Remus asked quietly. "You said you'd beat me up again if I tried to talk you out of this." A huff of air that might have been a laugh. "I didn't think I'd be so scared." "All your options are bad. You said it yourself. You just had to choose that you lost the least." "I'm starting to think I've ranked my freedom and integrity too low." "There are still 3 months until your birthday, if you wanted to leave now." "If I left now, I'd be jailed for it, desertion or dereliction or some such thing. It's okay. I have been thinking it over my whole life." Remus sighed and squeezed Sirius's hand in apology. "It's not the right thing to do, but it's the best I can do. I'm not going to leave the country."
"You could."
Another sigh, and Remus's shoulder brushed against Sirius's lightly. "Leave my family and friends? Leave school? When I am the first of my kind to make it this far?" He raised his hand and let it drop. "Tell me you're doing it for Hogwarts and the United Lycanthropes of Britain, and I'll personally deport you."
"I don't think I want children. That's the main thing, isn't it? With the damn war on, sometimes I don't think any of us will reproduce.
Art Weasley just had his third." Remus winced.
"Well then, he can have my children for me."
Sirius rubbed his thumb across the back of Remus's hand. Words failed him yet again. He thought it must be a talent of the Lupin family to reduce his normal eloquent charm to spasms of speechlessness.
"Lupin!"
Remus stood, and Sirius followed him into the cramped office. The registrar looked at Sirius with impatience. "And who are you?"
"I'm his citizen advocate." Sirius seized the initiative and showed his badge, smiling fetchingly as he extended his hand.
The registrar shook automatically, but dropped Sirius's hand as if he were a live coal when he realized what he was doing. He had shifty eyes, Sirius thought, and a weak chin, thinning mousy hair, and the complexion of someone who never saw daylight, which he probably didn't.
"Then you, my friend, are in the wrong place."
Sirius smiled in a way that was not exactly friendly. "Advocacy Code, Section 3, Paragraph 14. Werewolves are specifically designated as citizens." "You'll note for posterity that I'm not exactly in dispute with Lupin here." The registrar looked at Remus.
"Records."
Remus handed his folder over wordlessly. The registrar took Remus's file and flipped through it.
10 years, eh? Should have had him down here earlier. The whole legal age issue is so irrelevant, don't you think? Considering the danger to society at large. He didn't expect an answer, but waved Remus over to a hard, narrow cot covered with threadbare bath towel and institutional beige. "Strip and lie down." Remus walked over slowly.
"Does he have to take off all of his clothes?" Sirius asked.
He held up his badge when the man glared at him.
"We like to get a good look at them," he said, ignoring Remus. But you don't need to, do you? Sirius asked, trying desperately to channel Lily Evans. Calm yet strong, he thought, and made eye contact, and held it. The registrar was the first to look away. Fine, he said, fine. Waste down at least, Lupin, and don't waste any more of my time. Remus bent to untie his boots and towed them off. He removed his trousers and underpants together and folded them neatly on the end of the bed before he lay down. The registrar snapped his wand at Remus, and Remus stiffened. Sirius bit back a curse. Calm and rational, or I'll have you put out. What did you do? It's a simple petrificus. It's a lot worse when they can move around, trust me. And this way there's no risk of getting bitten. End of everything if you're bitten. Sirius breathed in slowly through his nose. His eyes are shut. Do you mind if I asked him? Yes, I bloody well would. Stand back. There's a boy. Tergio. The registrar grimaced and used his wand to shift Remus's penis to one side. He aimed a short chain of spells at the exposed scrotum and stepped back as soon as the last word left his lips, wiping his wand off with a paper and handkerchief. There now. Males are so much easier. Just a twist on the surgical defendiendo, you see. Now the females, he gave Sirius a jaunty wink. Well, female anatomy is just a bitch. Sirius stood with his fists balled, forcing himself to breathe normally. He wondered what Mrs. Lupin's reaction would have been. Somehow he suspected it would have ended up with a rather more violent castration. The registrar flipped open a metal strongbox on his desk and picked out type, setting it into an odd little metal device. He hummed through his nose as he did this. Sirius took up one of Remus's hands and squeezed it gently. The room was terribly warm, and the balls of fire that sufficed for light flickered too much. Sirius was feeling ill again. He did not want to think how Remus was feeling. The registrar pressed the odd little metal device against a tablet and checked that the number matched the one at the top of Remus's file. Then he turned and gave a smile that wholly failed to be reassuring. This will take a few minutes. If you want to sit down and read a magazine, he said vaguely, waving at the stool in front of the desk and the tottering stack of Dark Companion's review piled in the corner. You look, you know, like you might want to sit down. No, thank you. Remus's face was stiff and still, not that he had a choice. Sirius held his hand and ran his fingers through Remus's hair. He was not surprised to find it soaked with sweat. He was watching Remus lie there like the dead when Remus flinched. Flinching through the body bind curse was impressive and frightening. He turned to stare at the registrar, who was pressing the metal device against Remus's hip and muttering incantations slowly over it. What are you doing to him? Sirius asked, not really wanting to know. Registration number. A lot of them find a way to rip it off. Claws, teeth, you know, he winked at Sirius. So we have to get the number in deep, all the way down to the bone. Sirius felt the blood drain from his face. You're burning him? No, it's magic. It doesn't hurt them any. Amazing capacity for pain, dark creatures. The metal was starting to glow with a yellowish light. Sirius looked back at Remus. Tears were leaking from under his closed eyelids. Sirius took out his handkerchief and wiped Remus's face gently. Almost over, Mooney. Almost over. But it seemed to last forever until there was an orange flash and an audible pop from Remus's hip. The registrar tossed the metal device into a bucket of murky liquid in the corner, where it hissed and sent up dreadful fumes. Right then, all done for today. The registrar released the body bind and ignored the whimper that escaped Remus. He stamped Remus's file and handed it to Sirius, who was helping Remus back into his trousers. No bathing for 24 hours now. No alcohol and no sex, but you're underage anyway, so I don't want to know. Go out the back door, he added, emphasizing the words with a jerk of his head. Sirius knelt to put Remus's boots on, tug the laces tight, and tie them. He stood looking down at Remus, who was sitting looking down at nothing. He was trembling. Sirius put an arm around his waist and pulled him to standing. Let's get out of here, he whispered in Remus's ear, and Remus nodded. The back door led to another corridor, even more dismal and poorly lit. Remus was limping badly, and he kept tripping over the uneven stones. Sirius finally pulled him to a stop outside the Centaur liaison office and made him sit down on a dusty, unused sofa. You all right, Mooney?
Sirius asked, tightening his arm around Remus. Remus leaned just enough to rest his head on Sirius's shoulder. Wasn't too bad. It hurt like hell, didn't it? Remus sighed. I could use a fag, which certainly wasn't a negation. You all right? Sirius repeated, shifting to try and look at Remus's face. Remus resolutely pressed his face into the collar of Sirius's shirt. He hugged Remus tightly, centaurs be damned, and soothed Remus's back with his hands. Of course I'm all right. I don't feel pain or humiliation or fear. What are you thinking? Remus said, and his voice was too loud and not a little hysterical. Oh God, Pads! Oh God, what was I thinking? It will be all right, Sirius said into Remus's hair. It will, I promise you, because you are all right. You're bloody wonderful. I love you, you know. I've never loved anyone before, but I love you. In his arms, Remus stilled, and then one hand reached up to trace the line of his jaw. You don't have to say it back, Sirius said, rubbing his cheek against Remus's palm. It doesn't matter. It's like a present. Just say, thank you. Thank you, Remus whispered.
It may not mean that much to the world, but I love you. No trumpets played, no banners unfurled. When I love you, but darling, you mean so much to me. You're all I hear, you're all that I see. If there is one truth, then let it be that I love you.
Part the third. Charming Gentlemen, wherein our heroes don't get their just dessert because of an owl on it, but sweet nonetheless. The howler came for Sirius 2 days later. He had not exactly been expecting it, but he was prepared. The moment the black owl swooped down over the Gryffindor table, he half stood, and as it came to rest greedily on top of the pudding, he snatched the howler from its talons and sprinted from the great hall, hitting the door shoulder first and spinning with the impact into the corridor. He used his momentum to dash left to the bathrooms. He'd made it to the boys' toilet and thrown up silencing spells before it had even begun to smoke badly. Then it exploded, and his mother's voice filled the room, echoing and resounding until even Sirius's reflection in the mirror covered its ears.
Mudbloods!
Mudbloods!
Dark creatures!
Dark creatures!
Possessed!
Dark creatures!
Possessed.
Your father!
Possessed. Your
the
father!
Ministry. The ministry!
The shame to the house of black!
The house of black!
Made us a laughing
made
stock!
Us a laughing
made
stock!
Us a laughing
throw
stock.
Away everything
throw
we've given
everything
to you!
We've
done
given
for you!
Done
think
for
you're
you.
An adult?
Think you're an adult?
You're on your own then!
You're on your own then!
Your father and I!
Father and I!
No more! No more!
Insult!
No
insult.
More.
Betrayal.
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 Abomination.
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 Not our
not
son.
Our
not son.
Our not
son.
Our.
From out of the smoking remains of the howler fell a roll of parchment, heavy with seals and blood-red wax. Sirius opened it numbly, read the ornate legal words that meant, "You have no family or home anymore," then folded it absently into a pocket with shaking hands. When Sirius opened the door and stepped out into the corridor, Remus was waiting for him. Bad news from home? He took a long, shuddering breath. She finally persuaded him to disinherit me. A disgrace to the name of Black. Doesn't matter. Remus pulled him close and held him tightly. I'm sorry, I really am. I know you fought all the time, but it's a bad ending, isn't it? Nah, cut free from the past. Live life on my own terms. Life of Riley, Mooney. Life of bloody Riley. He turned and nuzzled Remus's throat blindly, needing to feel skin and comfort. This would be the language of the world he would live in from now on, he thought dizzily. Time to start practicing. He aimed to become fluent. If any students walked out of the hall and happened to glance down the bathroom corridor, expecting to see chaos and fury, they were, sadly, disillusioned. What they didn't see, standing among the shards of shattered past and lost futures, was Remus Lupin Prefect, wand still out, running his fingers through the stone wall, dark hair of Sirius Black. They did not see Sirius's hands find their place on Remus's hips, nor his mouth search for and find and open to Remus's.
They certainly did not see two pairs of eyes close, or two bodies press into each other against the chill of the charm, or fingers curl around the arch of a neck and tease their way under a robe, cautiously, to trace clavicles, ribs, the hardness of arm muscles, the delicate mysteries of blood moving under the skin. Not everyone passing the corridor, however, was a student. A soft, amused cough aimed in their direction caused their heads to turn together toward the light. Mr. Black, Mr. Lupin, gentlemen, behind closed doors, if you please. Remus removed the charm hastily, somehow simultaneously stepping away from Sirius and pulling the front of his robe shut with a nonchalance that Sirius found enviable. Ah, Professor Flitwick. Flitwick regarded them both with a fondness which, under the circumstances, was rather alarming. "Now, this is what I've been telling you, Mr. Black," he said, adjusting his eyeglasses. "You must not become complacent with your charms work. Amazing things you can do with charms. Behind closed doors, of course. Simply amazing once you put your mind to it." He nodded cordially to them and continued on his way. "Am I wrong?" Sirius said hoarsely as Flitwick's footsteps faded away, "in thinking that the charms he's referring to are... Remus was occupied with his buttons, but his ears were an alarming color. "Not wrong, no, I don't think," he muttered, and glanced up. This proved to be a mistake, because the moment their eyes met, Sirius exploded with laughter, and that set Remus off. It was like the spawn of a cheering charm mated with Rictum Sempra, and they were still howling as they staggered into the common room, after having spent a good 20 minutes trying to tell the password to an increasingly annoyed fat lady. "About time," she muttered as Remus finally choked out the words, "Da mihi basia mili." Sirius dropped in front of the fire with his arms wrapped around his stomach and moaned. Remus sprawled, gasping in a chair. Peter Pettigrew, who had been head-to-head with a curly-haired fourth year over a potions text, threw himself upright and aimed his wand at Remus. "Finite incantatum." Then he turned and did the same for Sirius. Remus squeezed and looked at Sirius. This time they both simply grinned at each other, too worn out to have any further hysterics. Communicating that glance was the knowledge that they shared a capacity for the joy that sustains, despite it all. That it was not an enchantment, but something as deep as their bones and blood. That it was their own, and could not be banished or rescinded or taken away by anyone else. Sirius took a deep breath of something with a taste of hope and looked away. "Thanks, Pete," he said, pushing himself upright. "Nah," Peter said, looking chuffed. "What are friends for?"
The end.
I remember growing as a child, had a childhood love, like two boys will often do, where we clung close to each other. I was slightly older, we both were only 10, and wonder if you love me now, like we did each other then. Can't you see? It's good for me. So can't you see? It's good for me, good for me. So can.
The music for this album, in order, was "Do You Like Boys?" 1973, performed by a straight band, Starbuck. But the song was actually written by gay songwriters Ken Howard and Alan Blakely. Then Tom Robinson Band, "Glad to Be Gay," 1978. Stephen Grossman, "Out," 1974. Joe Bryath, "I'm a Man," 1973. Mike Cohen, "Evil and Lusty," also 1973. Paul Wagner, "But I Love You," 1973 as well. And then finally it ends with Blackberry, "It's Okay," 1981. Some of these songs can be found on Strong Love, Songs of Gay Liberation, 1973 to 1981, which is you know, at Amazon, iTunes, all kinds of places. I found the others on queermusicheritage.com, which is a great place to get sidetracked into all kinds of interesting music.